the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're going to be talking about a fascinating story today that appeared in the London newspaper, the Daily Mail. In that newspaper, Helen Kirwan Taylor, mother of two, and a columnist, and evidently one who lives with some privilege there in British society, wrote that she is simply ready to declare herself bored with motherhood. You're going to be shocked by her language. And yet the purpose of our conversation about this today is not just to talk about how shocking is this article by a woman who says she's just bored out of her skull being a mom, but we're going to be talking about why an awful lot of what's most important in life is, well, considered by some people to be boring. I think it's going to be a fun conversation. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Someone has to cook the food. Someone has to change the diapers. Someone has to plant the corn. Someone has to reap it, to harvest it. Someone has to do all kinds of things that in the minds of others would be boring. Motherhood, no doubt, has many boring moments. I'm not sure that it can be described as intellectually stimulating to do some of the things that moms have to do and that millions of moms are doing even right now, perhaps even while listening to this program. I'll provide the intellectual stimulation as you're doing whatever you're doing right now. But just think about this. God's glory is in moms doing what moms are called to do, caring for their children. And if that, in essence, is found to be boring, it says a whole lot about that mom. Of course, there are situations related to fathers, too, but this one's about moms. We're going to be listening to this woman's argument, and then we're going to have a conversation about it. The number 877-893-8255, that's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to that in just a moment. First, a review of some other issues. At my website, albertmohler.com, today I published a major essay entitled The Culture of Offendedness. There is something really weird going on in this culture right now. There are many people who claim a right not to be offended. I've had people say this to my face. I have a right not to be offended by X, Y, or Z. Now, from a Christian perspective, this becomes especially important when the issue is evangelism. When people are claiming, I have the right not to be offended by being told about Jesus. I have the right not to be offended by seeing a cross on government property. I have a right not to be offended by whatever one may propose or argue or present and all the rest. This is the logic of what is behind the hate speech legislation. You can't have a conversation about homosexuality in many contexts, for instance. It's just to take one example, because homosexuals are claimed to be offended by any suggestion that homosexuality could be sinful. And it's this emotivist definition of offensiveness that really comes down. In other words, Paul Helm, the British philosopher, a very distinguished philosopher, makes a great case, and that is that the word offended in the past meant some substantial harm. That's why Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount would say something like, if your right hand offend thee, cut it off. It doesn't mean some emotional response. I just don't like my right hand. It's that there's some great injury going on here. That has now been transformed into an emotive state of concern in which someone just doesn't like it. I'm not even necessarily outraged. I'm just offended. You say I might be wrong. I'm offended by that. You say that my beliefs are wrong. I'm very offended by that. You say that there's only one way to heaven. I'm very offended by that. It's this culture of offendedness that is the problem with people claiming some kind of right, some basic human right not to be offended. Folks, there is no right not to be offended, and there can't be such a right. Not if we're going to have anything like free speech, the free interchange of ideas, or, for that matter, Christian evangelism. The Apostle Paul, writing to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians, spoke of the cross of the Lord Jesus Christ as foolishness to the Greeks and a stumbling block to Jews. In other words, there's something offensive to many people about the essence of the Christian gospel. It is the only gospel that saves. And by the way, that only part is also offensive to other people. The Apostle Paul was very clear that he did not want to be offensive. In that same book, he would write about being all things to all people in order that by all means he might save some. But there is an inherent offense to the gospel. I think you'll find the essay interesting. You can find it at Albert Mohler, that's MOHLER.com. It is posted this morning, entitled The Culture of Offendedness, A Christian Challenge. Fascinating stuff there. By the way, the Islamic author, the Muslim author Salman Rushdie, novelist and author of the Satanic Verses, who was under a fatwa, or a Muslim death threat, for the authorship of that book, makes a very good point. He says this: the idea that any kind of free society can be constructed in which people will never be offended or insulted is absurd. So, too, is the notion that people should have a right to call on the law to defend them against being offended or insulted. A fundamental decision needs to be made. Do we want to live in a free society or not? Democracy is not a tea party where people sit around making polite conversation. In democracies, people get extremely upset with each other. They argue vehemently against each other's positions. End quote. Good point. I think you'll find the essay interesting. I posted another article this morning at albertmohler.com, and this one I also believe is very important. Hats off to Professor Robert A.J. Gagnon, who is professor of New Testament at Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. He's a brave man. He's done some of the best scholarship out there in understanding a New Testament approach to human sexuality. Now, his approach is interpreting the entire New Testament, but because of the contested and controversial issue of homosexuality, that really has been what has brought his name to the attention of many. At his own website, at robertgagnon.net, he has published a brilliant essay on the accommodating middle, and I respond to that today again at albertmohler.com. That's Albert, M-O-H-L-E-R.com. The point that this professor makes is that in these denominations that are fighting over homosexuality, which means they're actually fighting over biblical authority, they're actually fighting over theological boundaries and confessional integrity, it's the accommodating middle that makes the difference. In other words, there aren't enough hard, strident liberals to win the day. But the liberals get their way because the middle decides that it won't draw clear distinctions. And the moment you do not draw clear distinctions, the liberals win. That's exactly what happened in the Presbyterian Church USA. The PCUSA had its fight again over the issue of homosexuality and decided that they would do the impossible, the intellectually incredible, the logically absurd. They would stay with their policy that that the ministry, the ordained ministry, would be limited to heterosexual persons who are practicing heterosexual monogamy. But then they went on and suggested that they will allow local presbyteries to violate that whenever they see fit. The professor's article is entitled The Accommodating Middle. The full title is I Am of the Middle, the Subgroup of the Middle and Its Accommodation to Sexual Immorality. I want to read to you one section from this. It's really, really important. Professor Gagnon said this: it is a terrible thing to manipulate the text of Scripture to advance what is essentially an anti-scriptural agenda. There can never be true Christ-centered unity around the toleration of sexual immorality that would have appalled and does appall Jesus. The church should be about graciously and humbly recovering the lost, not training them to be content with their lost condition. Very, very important point. We talk a lot on this program about cultural symbol signs that are symptoms pointing to a deeper crisis. And this is one of those symptoms. The New York Times yesterday, an article entitled A Dog's Life, Sure, But with Aromatherapy and Massages. It's from Beverly Hills, California. No great surprise there. But the amazing thing is that this trend is really spreading across the country. Reporter Jennifer Steinhauer says, when the temperature here soars and the steaming humidity makes you feel you look like so much bok choy, you might crave an aromatherapy massage with tea tree oil or perhaps a nice cooling bath with foaming mousse without ever having to leave your property. You can have this if you are Candace Bergen's Basset Hound. Now, my guess is that no one listening to this program this morning, or whenever you're listening to it, woke up this morning concerned with whether or not Candace Bergen's Basset Hound is happy. But Candace Bergen was, and so she hired someone, affirmed by the name of Spa Dog, to come by to her neighborhood and give her dog aromatherapy. This is really weird stuff. You know, we spend more on dog food and dog health care and dog toys and all the rest in this country than is spent on the health care and the feeding and the medical needs of some human beings in other countries around the world. There's something seriously out of whack. There's also something seriously sick about a society that transforms animals into vanity objects. And that's what's really happening here. A Basset Hound doesn't need aromatherapy. God did not make a Basset Hound to have such a need, nor to receive such provision. Fascinating stuff going on here. It says here, every day a white van bearing the pastel-lettered name Spadog, makes its way through the hidden byways of the toniest neighborhoods in Beverly Hills and greater Los Angeles beyond, avoiding traffic on the way to a grooming appointment with a dog. The man who runs this, Mr. Ogden, said that he chose a spa van for dogs because he wanted to differentiate himself from grooming vans that simply offered traditional grooming services. Not Mr. Ogden. He says, quote, "Dogs have become like children now. People want the best for them. The best means aromatherapy, new age treatments, nail polish for special occasions, and hair dye for fur. For instance," he says, "if an owner craves a dog with a pink tail for Easter. On behalf of my dog, Baxter the Wonder Beagle, I want to register offendedness that a dog will become such a vanity object for its owner. However, I think this man running this business is onto something when he says dogs have become like children now. There are some people who prefer them. That's sick in itself. There are some people bored with their children." And that's the topic for our discussion. The phone number 877-893-8255. We'll be right back. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about motherhood in recent years. You've got Caitlin Flanagan's book, Trying to Recover Motherhood, but in kind of a postmodern, post-feminist kind of way. And then you have all the discussion we've had about these calls for women to go back into the workplace because they're letting the team down by sacrificing their otherwise meaningful lives by spending time with children. And yet there is a lot of conversation out there on the Internet and beyond, in the media, USA Today, the Daily Mail in London, and others, about the essay written by Helen Kerwin Taylor. I understand she's an expatriate American, now living in London with her husband and two children. And she has written an article in the Daily Mail published just a few days ago entitled, "Sorry, But My Children Bore Me to Death." And, you know, I think people were shocked by her candor. And shocked by the fact that the Daily Mail ran this essay with a picture of Ms. Kerwin Taylor along with her two little boys. This is what she has to say. She says this: "It's the start of the summer holidays when millions of mothers despair at how to entertain their children for the next 6 weeks. What none of them dare say is that they would rather their children were still at school or, frankly, anywhere else." Here she says, "The lie started when my eldest son was less than 10 months old. Invitations to attend a children's birthday party or worse, a sing-along session were met with the same refrain: I'd love to, but I just can't spare the time. Instead," I'm paraphrasing, "she sent her nanny," and she says, I'm quoting her here, "I confess that I was probably ogling the merchandise at Harvey Nichols or having my highlights done instead. Of course, I love my children as much as any mother, but the truth is I found such events so boring I made up any excuse. I can't say which activity I dreaded more. Playing pass the parcel at parties with a child who permanently crawled away from the action towards the priceless knickknacks, or listening to the other mothers go on about such excitements as teething and potty training. Mind-numbing," she says, exclamation point. "To be honest, I spent much of the early years of my children's lives in a workaholic frenzy because the thought of spending time with them was more stressful than any journalistic assignment I could imagine." Now, I don't know of any mom who has this straightforwardly, and this is not meant as a humor piece. It's a straightforward piece by this woman saying, "I turned myself into a workaholic because the last place I wanted to be was home with my children." Listen to this. "While all my girlfriends were dropping important careers and occupying their afternoons with cake baking, I was begging the nanny to stay on, at least until she had read my two a bedtime story. What kind of mother hates reading bedtime stories? A bad mother, that's who, and a mother who is bored rigid by her children. I know this is one of the last taboos of modern society, to admit that you, a mother of the new millennium, don't find your offspring thoroughly fascinating and enjoyable at all times is a state of affairs very few women are prepared to admit. We feel ashamed and unfit to be mothers. It is as though motherhood is an exclusive private club and everybody's a member except for us few. But then, kids have become careers, often the last career for millions of women who have previously trained for years to enter other professional fields of business. Consequently, few of those women will admit that they made a bad or, worse, a boring career move to motherhood. My children have got used to my disappearing to the gym while they're doing their prep. How boring to learn something you never wanted to learn in the first place. In other words, while they're studying, doing their pre-study work for school, she heads to the gym. She says, I don't want to fool with them. They know better than to expect me to sit through a cricket match, and they're completely given up on expecting me to spend school holidays taking them to museums or enjoying the latest cinema blockbuster alongside them. Am I a lazy, superficial person because I don't enjoy packing up their sports kit or making their lunch or sitting through coffee meetings with other mothers discussing how Mr. Science said such and such to little Johnny, and should we all complain to the headmaster? Goes on and says here, when I brought it up at lunch yesterday, my friend June, a stay-at-home mother of three young children, admitted that, quote, children are mind-numbingly boring, and the act of being with them all day and night is responsible for many mental breakdowns. Looking after children makes women depressed, she concluded. All those glossy magazine spreads showing celebrity mothers looking serene at home with their children serve only to make women feel inadequate. What the pictures don't show is the monotony, loneliness, and relentless domesticity that goes with child rearing. They don't show the tantrums, the food spills, and the 10 aborted attempts at putting on shoes. They don't show the husband legging it to the pub so he doesn't have to change a nappy, that is, by the way, a diaper, either. Lots of stuff in here. There's some real bitterness pouring out. Those of us who are not thoroughly child-centric, meaning we don't put our children's guitar practice before our own ambitions, are made to feel guilty. We're not meant to have an adult life, at least not one that doesn't include them. I think there is a crisis right now in both masculinity and femininity, a crisis in the role of women and a crisis in the role of men. Earlier this week, we began by talking about the crisis with masculinity. It was really occasioned by this New York Times article about some 13% of men aged 30 to 55 who aren't working or looking for work. They simply have given up on one of the central callings of manhood. To work, to be productive, to take care of your family. They've given up on that. They don't want anything to do with it. They'll sit around and play, sit on the front porch and let their wife work. Something sick there. There is something sick on the female side, having to do with motherhood and wifery and all the rest, when this kind of story sets off the kind of discussion that Helen Kerwin Taylor set off with her essay about her children boring her to death. She really smoked out both sides in this argument. And my guess is that when you're talking about a great cultural divide in this country or beyond this, in Great Britain and beyond, there has to be a huge divide between those women who find motherhood soul-satisfying, exhilarating, and interesting, and those who find it mind-numbing and boring. Let's just rehearse the fact that we're not making this up as we go along. We believe that God had a perfect purpose in creating the world and in giving us, as men and women, different roles. That God gave us the arena of the domestic, the arena of the family, the natural family, as a way of bringing glory to himself by the right ordering of his creation. And how can anyone who had a mother who gave herself devotedly to her own raising, and I assume that Helen Kerwin Taylor had a mom who devoted herself to her, now write about it being so boring that it's beneath her dignity? You'll remember that we were talking just a few weeks ago about an author who said that no one should have to clean anyone else's bottom, speaking of the role of a mom changing endless diapers. That just shouldn't happen. Well, somebody has to do it, lady, and someone did it for you. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here to make that statement. We need to celebrate motherhood, not in some kind of Victorian recovery of some kind of cultural ideal. We need to recover motherhood for the glory of God. We need to encourage moms. And we also need to open the discussion about, well, whether or not some of the things that moms do are boring after all. But does that change the moral status of motherhood? The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, when it comes to being bored, by the way, one of the things I have to say is an awful lot of life is boring. But it's life. Let's go to David calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, David.
You know, Dr. Mueller, it basically sounds like the feminists have done well. They've succeeded in what they wanted to do because you've got women that want to be men and you've got men that want to be women, and the roles are reversed.
You know, that's exactly right. Here we are from Monday show to Friday show, and David, you're right about the bookends. What you have are, I have to say that it's a corrupted vision in the switch, too. You know, you have these men that won't be men, and now women who seem to see. Well, you remember when the late Betty Friedan wrote her book and really kind of launched the feminist revolution? You know, one of the things she said is that the domestic sphere is a prison, a domestic concentration camp, she called it. And, you know, evidently, when you make that kind of argument and it does seep into the culture, what you produce is a Helen Kerwin Taylor who eventually says, look, I don't claim to be the best mom in the world. I'm just saying that I don't feel guilty about not being. My kids bore me. I'd rather be anywhere but with them. Folks, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is really, really surprising stuff to me. Now, I mean, I know out there there are radical ideological feminists who've been making these arguments, but this wasn't published in Ms. Magazine. This was published in one of the major daily newspapers, and it's not just in Great Britain. It was picked up here in USA Today. Prompting a lot of discussion, I think the best discussion is going to be right here. Join us at 877-893-8255, and we'll be right back.
To the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about women who find motherhood boring, moms who just don't like being moms, they don't like their kids. It's not to say they don't like them when they like them. They just don't like them when they're actually having to care for them or play their games or take them to the museum or anything. Helen Kerwin Taylor has written a very, very candid piece, and it's getting a lot of traction out there for good reason. The very candor with which she speaks shocks us into facing the worldview that she's espousing here. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Ray calling from Ideson, Tennessee, listening to WHCB. Go ahead, Ray.
Yes, sir. I am really not surprised that this is happening. Much of today's childbearing generation has learned to worship at the altar of me instead of the altar of the Lord. And the second thing is, if a mother finds motherhood boring, she just ain't doing it right.
Boy, I like that line, Ray. And that's spoken with the conviction like you are a mom.
Several children.
Well, God bless you. I want to ask you a question, though. Just honestly, Ray. There have to be some boring moments along the way, right?
Well, there's some boring moments no matter what you're doing in life.
Bingo. Yeah, exactly. But I mean, that doesn't mean that you find motherhood unfulfilling, right?
Oh, no, sir. Absolutely not. I loved it. I still love it. My children are grown, but I still love being their mom.
Well, God bless you, Ray. I hear that in your voice, and I appreciate that. And I think your first point is also important. There is a deep narcissism, and I'm not just pointing fingers at young women. There are a lot of young men who are the same way. That's one of the reasons why they're not getting busy and getting married, a lot of them, is because they're just real happy sitting around ordering pizza out of a flat box and playing video games all night. You know, they just aren't getting with it to understand a deeper purpose in life. Let's go to Mary calling from Kingsport, Tennessee. Go ahead, Mary.
I'm a 23-year-old stay-at-home mom. I have three children under 3 years old. And what I have to say is I enjoy my children. They're fun. They say the funniest things. But there are times when I think society makes it hard on us to be able to stay at home. Everybody tells me, get you a job, do something else with your life. But I think it's society that makes it hard on us to be able to be content with what we do, even though it is fulfilling to take care of your children. But it's not also when society is telling us there's more out there and that we're missing it.
Oh, Mary, thank you so much for your call. You know, I really want to say to you that that I think society is simply lying to you with the pictures it puts out there. With women who are supposedly happier than you might be at any given moment because they're happier being a fashion designer or a journalist or an editor or a lawyer or whatever. You know, my guess is that in your most tired, exhausted, frustrated, and even bored moment as a mom, you're probably healthier and happier. And you're doing what is simply right in God's sight. And God bless you. With three kids under the age of two, you can't have many moments to think about this, I can imagine. But I'm just thankful that you're there for your kids, and I'm thankful that you do find that satisfaction in them. And I can simply say, as you say, society makes it hard. Of course it does, because we are continually being lied to by the culture around us. It's not just about motherhood. We're being lied to about the good life. We're being lied to about what fun and satisfaction are supposed to be. We're being lied to about sex. We're being lied to about marriage. We're being lied to about money. And, it's the same thing towards a lot of young men in different situations, towards young couples and all the rest. We're just bombarded with cultural lies. But Christians have to be the people of the truth not because we're smarter than everyone else, that's hardly the case, but because we know that God has a purpose for us that we don't have to invent. We simply have to find in obedience this purpose that God has given us. And Mary, God's glory is in what you do, I'm sure I could say, nearly 24 hours a day with those three precious children. I mean, the bathing, the waking, the disciplining, the teaching, the cleaning, the cooking, the wiping off of faces and other parts, all that is just a part of God's glory. Because those three little people, by the grace and mercy of God, are the future. And you have the greatest role, perhaps, of anyone else, and you and your husband together as their parents, but you especially as mom, informing those children in those early years to know whether, for one thing, the world's a happy place or a sad place. There's a purpose for life or not. They're just the big questions of life and the little incidents and moments of life where you can have that incredible impact in those little lives. Thanks for calling, Mary. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is something important for us to talk about. I'm not thankful for the essay, but I'm thankful that it has given us an opportunity to face an issue confronted by millions of women. We'll be right at it when we come back. But my children bore me to death. That's the word from Helen Kerwin Taylor in her essay by that title, published in the Daily Mail in London. The controversy has leapt across the Atlantic. USA Today ran a major feature on this. And again, you know, what's interesting is that a lot of people are responding to this, some by saying, hey, she's so far out of line, she needs to be called on it. She's missed the point. You know, if you decide to be a mother, you take the responsibility to find it fascinating. You know, I like that kind of approach. And then on the other hand, there are people who are saying, no, she's right. She's right. Children really aren't very, very interesting at all. By the way, Ms. Kerwin Taylor said, and I'm quoting here from USA Today, up until 10 years ago, parents did not spend every waking moment with their children. We have become a society where everything children say and do is meant to be fulfilling. Women are not allowed to have a wife of their own, and if they do, it's considered selfish. You know, this is rationalization of the worst form. What she's saying is that some kids are now overparented. Well, that's certainly true. But when she turns around and says that in the past women were allowed to have wives of their own outside their children, you know, where has she been? You know, I have to wonder about her own mom, but she's not here, and we tried to get her on the program. We were unable to secure her. But I just have to wonder, you know, her mother must have found her boring at some point. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's talk with Andrea from Martinsburg, Ohio, calling on XM Channel 170. Go ahead, Andrea.
Hi. I don't understand, if she's so bored with her children at 10 months old, why she had another one. I've got three kids, teenager, pre-teenager, and a 9-year-old. I have a 9, 11, and 15-year-old, and never a dull moment. I mean, they keep me hopping on a regular basis.
Now, they keep you hopping, Andrea, and I really appreciate your call. Let me ask you this. Do you feel adequately intellectually stimulated by your children?
Yes. Some of the questions they ask me, I just look at them and I think, oh, my gosh, where did that come from?
You know? Yeah, and the challenge of motherhood is about as complicated as any job I could imagine. You have to be, in essence, not by professional training, but by actual expertise, you have to be doctor, lawyer, counselor, psychologist, you know, the whole thing, right?
Exactly. You know, my youngest one's got cystic fibrosis, so she's definitely a handful. But and I work a full-time job. My husband's getting ready to start Bible college. So, you know, I would love to be able to stay home, and I'm working towards that. So the other lady who thinks that women should work and not stay home is nuts. But
yeah, you know, I really appreciate, Andrea, the fact that you just kind of throw it right back in the court and say, even though you're not able to be at home all the time with your kids right now, that's where you want to be. There's just a rightness in that, even as a desire of your heart. And that speaks of your joy in being with your children, which is the joy that evidently Helen Kerwin Taylor lacks when she's with her own. Appreciate that point. Let's go to David calling from Dunedin, Florida, listening on WTBN. Go ahead, David.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Mueller. In reference to the mother, Ms. Taylor, I guess it is, I really cannot believe that she really had the right mindset when she set out on married life, because to feel bored with children is it is hard for me to imagine that you can be bored with children, not if you're meeting their needs and meeting them effectively. But I'd rather jump to the very end of life continuum, and I would think that she ought to look a little bit at what happens to senior citizens. She'll be one someday, if God willing. When they are no longer able to care for their needs, who is going to take care of her needs? And it probably will be her children.
You know, David, you're on to something profound there. At lunch today, we had a fairly significant number of couples over at our house for lunch, and my wife and I were in conversation with them, and there were actually lots of moms in there, every one of the ladies, and we were talking about that and their kids. And this issue came up, and the line that was written by one of these women who said no one should have to clean another person's bottom. It was talking about babies and changing diapers and all the rest, which it can't be, you know, the most exciting moment of life. You know, God bless it, has to happen, though. And this woman just quickly turned to me and said, well, what's going to happen when she has to have that at the end of her life? You're exactly right. In other words, this kind of thing happens. We are not self-sufficient. We don't come into the world self-sufficient. And generally speaking, we don't go out of the world self-sufficient. Somebody's got to take care of us. And boy, I tell you, I don't know that I always gave my mom all the intellectual stimulation that she may have wanted. My mother had four kids. I probably gave her more than she deserved at other points. But, you know, I'm glad that isn't how she measured whether or not she was going to take care of me and my wife with our two kids. The same thing. You know, here you have a very intelligent, brilliant woman who gives herself devotedly to her kids. And never once have I heard from my wife, you know, the kids bore me. I've heard some other things from her, which is just a part of being a parent, you know, in terms of challenges and all the rest. And just the stuff of especially young children. I don't want to minimize this. I mean, the challenge of being in a house all day with a couple of preschoolers, I mean, that's more than a man could probably handle. I'll tell you that right up front. I think that's why God, in making us, you know, both in the image of God, but with different and complementary roles, understood that God did not make men to be able to handle that well. That just makes me respect my wife and motherhood, you know, all the more. But at the beginning of life and at the end of life, someone's got to take care of us. And, you know, someone who thinks that's beneath their dignity, frankly, just frightens me. Let's go to Mary calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, yes. I'm the mother of an eight-month-old. And listening to that woman's article, to be honest, I understood a lot of what she was saying. Because that's how we would all think, apart from the Word of God and the Spirit of God shaping our minds. And for me, it's a fight, you know, daily to conform my mind to what does Christ think about my life. And if, you know, if I'm walking according to my sinful nature, then yes, you know, I can find it mind-numbingly boring at times. But if I'm looking at the Word of God and He's telling me this child is a gift, and these trials are for your sanctification to make me more like Christ. And so that's where I think, as Christians, we need to fight. To train our minds to think of our lives according to what God says about them rather than what our own selfish desires say.
Mary, God bless you. I just don't have anything to say after that other than amen. Wow, that was just beautiful and eloquent and so profoundly biblically and theologically true. Our purpose in life is to glorify God in all that we are and in all that we were made to be. And when a woman is married and takes care of her husband and children in that sphere of the domestic and does so with joy, with love, with patience and long-suffering and dedication and devotion and all too little sleep, the glory of God is in that. The Bible is very clear about that in honoring motherhood, not just sentimentalizing it. That's the problem in our culture. We want to make it a sentimental reality. I'm not talking about sending moms cards. I'm talking about recognizing that motherhood is one of the greatest and most essential callings that any human being can ever experience. We'll be right back with some further thoughts. What a thought-provoking issue today. We'll be right back. This is the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back. We're talking about Helen Kerwin Taylor's article about being bored as a mom. We've had a great discussion. We've heard from quite a few moms. That I expected. We've also heard from some men as well. We have Mark on the line calling from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, listening on XM 170. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah. Hi, Al. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out to this lady that life wasn't supposed to be, we were never promised to be, you know, made happy, or life was not supposed to be fun, you know, in the first place. And I bet that kid, when that kid gets older, is going to look back and say to his friends, my mom was boring.
Yeah, you know, Mark, you make a very, very important and indeed an essential point here. And that is that we don't get to define what we want out of our lives in terms of, well, fun, exhilaration, interest, and all the rest. I think you're right that that life isn't supposed to be fun all the time. And yet I would say that we're supposed to find joy in the midst of it. But the fact is that joy is not how many people would define it, as an emotional state of pure, unadulterated bliss, interest, excitement, enjoyment, pleasure, and all the rest. Joy is found in contentment. I have found in whatsoever state I am to be content, said the Apostle Paul. And contentment is an understanding that if we're doing what God called us to do, if we are fulfilling the mission that God has given us to fulfill, if we are being obedient where God commands, if we are showing his glory in whatever place, in whatever role he has placed us, then we have to be content. You know, if we are there, what will we want on the other side of the fence? There is no greener grass. I think, again, going back to what one of our callers said, a young woman who said, you know, it's very hard, because I think it was Mary who said that, you know, it's hard to be content when society keeps telling you you ought to want something else. You know, that's a very interesting thing. The want organ, you know, the whatever gland produces want in our lives, speaking here just in terms of a parable, we're not to just follow whatever culture says we're supposed to want. We're supposed to bring our desires captive to the Word of God. And so one of the problems is that we want the wrong things, and where we should find satisfaction, then we're just not finding it because our want is completely misdirected. Folks, this has been a good discussion. You'll be seeing more about this out in the blogosphere and on the Internet, and perhaps in terms of broadcast and print news as well. Helen Kerwin Taylor has really launched a big discussion here. I don't think it's going to go away. There is a flurry right now of interest in motherhood. Lots of stuff out there. You go to the local bookstore, you can find on the new book table several books on motherhood, some celebrating it, some criticizing it. Folks, here is the bottom line fact, no pun intended. Without moms, we wouldn't be here. And if moms quit, this is the end. Folks, that's not going to happen. We'll see you next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.